Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show and to the final episode of season six. Today's episode is the fourth and final installment of our guest host episode, and it is a really beautiful and special one. It's been a really amazing season full of incredible guests, and I just feel like the show continues to really become more and more of itself, and it's fun to follow it and flow with it. It's changed a lot over the years, and I just thank you so much for being here and being part of this community, and I'm excited to see where it goes next. But we're going to take a little break, at least a couple of months break, over the summer, and come back with some awesome stuff for you in the late summer, early fall. I wanted to let you know that I currently have recorded tarot readings available. That's kind of shifted to be my main reading offering. So if you're interested in that, I'll put the link in the show notes, and you can also find it on my website. These are 30-minute recorded readings that use your birth cards and your cards of the year as anchors, and also enter through different passages that I read. It's something that I've started to do, using cards to basically, whenever I read a book, I'm always writing in the margin, tarot cards that passages remind me of. And so when I do these readings and I calculate your birth cards and your cards of the year, I'll go to my bookshelf and feel myself drawn bibliomancy style to different texts and look through them and find where in the text I've noted that those particular cards. So that's kind of how I begin the reading. I share some of those passages, allow whatever's coming up for you to come up, and then see where it takes me. And then I start to pull cards from there based on what you've shared with me in the intake form, whatever themes or questions are, you know, kind of on your mind. So if that sounds interesting to you, and if you're someone like me that really enjoys audio, I listen to tons of podcasts while I'm walking and working outside. If you'd like to be able to do that with your tarot reading, head over to my website and book one of the recorded readings, and I would love to read for you. The other thing I want to mention is we have our June tarot hang coming up on Patreon. It will be next Thursday, June 29th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And these tarot hangs are super informal. I go in with absolutely no idea what's going to happen, honestly. We just come together and kind of share where we're at, and we pull cards asking for messages that want to come through us into the group, and then dialogue about whatever topics come up. And it's always really deep and rich and exciting and different every single time. So if you're a fan of the show, and if you've been thinking about joining our Patreon, you can do so for as little as $2 a month by heading over to patreon.com/insearchoftarot, and you will be invited to attend the hang. And I will just remind everyone that the show is completely reliant on that Patreon support. We do pay all of our guests and guest co-hosts, and we make no money from Patreon. It's a complete wash. In fact, we lose a little bit of money doing this podcast. So we have been really trying to grow that Patreon community, really relying on the support of that community. So we would love to see you there. I also write essays that I share there. I share discounts always. Patreon's always the first to know about classes and gets the deepest discount offer for all of my classes. And then we do these tarot hangs every month. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, head over to patreon.com/insearchoftarot and join us. All right. I'm going to introduce you now to today's, the voices you're going to hear today. You're going to hear our guest co-host, Maria Minnis. And Maria has chosen to speak with Sarah Aranza from Hawthorne Mountain Tarot. Maria introduces Sarah at the top of the conversation. So I'm going to let you hear Sarah's bio through Maria, but I will share now Maria's bio with you. Maria Minnis is an unapologetically Black writer, artist, ritual facilitator, and tarot reader who teaches people about blending their spirituality with liberation work and sensuality. She has creatively worked with tarot for over 20 years and considers herself an eternal student of life and thus the tarot. Her work is inspired by her belief that the end result of all magic should be to cultivate a more equitable and empathetic planet. Her anti-racism tarot workbook, Tarot for the Hard Work, will be released by Wiser Books in fall 2023. Maria enthusiastically drinks from the flowing fire hose of life and wouldn't have it any other way. What an amazing final sentence. So thank you, Maria and Sarah, for recording this conversation and sharing it with us. Thank you to all of you for being part of another amazing season of In Search of Tarot. And I can't wait to see where we go next. So enjoy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the In Search of Tarot podcast. I am Maria Minnis, guest hosting today. We're going to be talking about tarot and relationships. So that includes friendships, romantic relationships, etc. And what better person to talk about tarot and friendships with a tarot reader who is my friend and also a huge inspiration for me. Sarah Aranza Amador of Hawthorne Mountain Tarot believes that the world is imperfect and beautiful, that humans are wired for curiosity, empathy, and change, and that you are magic. Sarah is a fiction author and tarot reader living on the Monterey Bay of Northern California. A former university professor with a background in literary analysis, nonviolent communication, psychoanalysis, and critical theory and philosophy, Sarah works with the tarot to explore inter and intra-personal connection and understanding. Find her online on Instagram at Hawthorne Mountain Tarot. We'll have the handle in the notes for you for tarot things. And you can also find her on Twitter at Aranza Sarah for fiction things. You can sign up for her monthly tarot meditations email. Quick note, you must do this. They are so worthwhile. And you can also make appointments for one-on-one tarot sessions on her website by clicking through her link tree on her Instagram profile. So welcome. Hi. How are you doing?
Hi. Oh my God. What an introduction. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here with you.
I'm so happy to be here with you, friend. I just wanted to pause and just say thank you for sharing your time and sharing space with me. I know that so much of my tarot insight has been influenced by the things that you have shared and the conversations that we've had. And when I was thinking about a topic for this podcast, I was like, okay, we hear about tarot for this or for that, you know, for spiritual businesses and for romantic relationships and money. But I was like, I'd like to talk about, you know, friendships. And so I was thinking, okay, that's the topic. Who do I want to talk to? Well, of course, a friend. And you were the first person that popped up in my mind. So all of that is to say, thank you for your time and your space. And I'm really excited to be here with you today.
Oh, dang. Likewise, friend. But I mean, I'm so humbled. This is so wonderful because I think of you in the exact same way. You're somebody whose work really inspires me. And I love being able to connect with you and talk with you. And yeah, my practice just gets better and better with all of the relationships I have with other tarot practitioners, but you're a special one. So thank you for inviting me. This is wonderful.
Thank you. Oh, friend, you know I'm a highly emotional person and I'm going to hold back tears. but thank you so much. Yeah, so we're talking about friendship and I wanted to get started just by asking you about your tarot journey, particularly around how you've used it in your personal life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a good question. I feel like my first exposure to tarot was when I was a kid. I must have been a teenager, and it came from my aunts. My mom has four sisters, and at least two of them, I think that they're all witchy in their own way, but I have two witchy aunts in particular. And I remember being a kid and one of my aunts being like, "Ooh, let's do a tarot reading." These are also folks who I don't see very often because my mom's family's all they're all in Europe, they're all in Spain. All of my mom's side of the family's there. So, when I was a kid, we only got to see them once every couple of years. And it always felt like a reintroduction. There was always butterflies in our stomachs whenever we got to see them again. Because it had always been so long, and this was like before Skype, before FaceTime. Being apart from them really meant like living a life for 2 years and then being totally reintroduced. So, tarot was first introduced to me as like a fun get to know you game, and then when I went to college, I started studying literature and philosophy, and my tarot practice really got started in this like very academic and very intellectual way where I bought my first tarot deck to see how I could play with them with my own creative writing. And that didn't really go anywhere as like an intellectual pursuit for me for the first couple of years. It just kind of like sat. I remember feeling very intimidated, like I had a lot to learn and a lot to memorize. And that was really intimidating. Things didn't really pick up again until I started playing with tarot with others again. As like a singular intellectual pursuit, it just kind of sat on the back burner. But once I started maybe 4 or 5 years ago, really playing with the cards with others, that's when it really blossomed for me. So that's the journey so far.
That's wonderful. I'm curious, might I ask, what was that first tarot deck you had?
It was the Rider-Waite. And you know what? Maybe it was because it was the Rider-Waite that I was just like, I'm not really connecting with this. It was just, there's something about it that I was studying it like an encyclopedia. And it wasn't until until I was like really attracted to my first deck, like my first Kindred deck. And that is the Morgan Greer deck. That is a deck that I play with a lot when I have tarot sessions with clients, because I just feel like the imagery is like the images are big, they're immediately resonant, they're colorful. That really attracted me. And over time, I've developed other relationships with other decks that I think really influenced my desire to connect with the cards.
I can really relate to that. I definitely felt an encyclopedia study vibe with the Rider-Waite. And none of this is to dismiss that deck. I know of the impact that it's had, that it still has. But there's something special about when you get that deck that you're like, okay, I connect to this and I can not just learn about this, but actually work with this and create a relationship between you and the tarot deck. And
And yeah, absolutely.
yeah, that's what I was hearing in your story. And I just instantly thought of myself and that realization I had. And it totally transformed my relationship with the tarot from like a very static thing to something that changes and evolves as I change and evolve, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I totally resonate with that for sure.
So, back to the topic of friendships, I recently read this graphic novel called Seek You, A Journey Through American Loneliness. And it's this graphic novel, it's about the epidemic of loneliness. We have so many avenues of connection available to us these days, yet so many of us feel alone. I'm curious, what tarot archetypes do you think reflect that feeling?
That is such a good that's such a good question, and I came up with such a long list. I was like, well, if you think about it this way, this card, and if you think about this feeling, that card.
As it
And
goes.
immediately, I feel like this was a no-brainer. Immediately, the Five of Coins, or the Five of Pentacles came up for me is that first image of just like that first layer, that top layer of loneliness, feeling disconnection, feeling outside looking in, feeling alienation, that all of which are, you know, those feelings are so closely tied to our senses of security and safety. Those are all like real visceral bodily things. And that Five of Coins for me was like the very first step. And then like going down through the other sedimentary layers, then I think of like, ooh, what about the Five of Cups? That can often be a devastatingly lonely card. The Moon, and I've got like an especially troubled like relationship with the Moon. I have a really difficult time with the upside down and the inside out of the Moon. But that Moon card for me feels like the dark side of the Moon. Oof, that feels lonely. Wow. Seven of Cups as well. That feels
more.
You know, I've got to pull out my deck and take a look. Aha, there we go. Yeah, sometimes I just need the visual. That Seven of Cups for me is, I often get a sense of static indecision with the Seven of Cups, where, you know, we're met with like this beautiful wall of possibility, and all of the different, you know, all of these desires, all of these wants and wishes, and the fantasy life that grows around them, being faced with all of these fantastic possibilities and not being able to move towards one because we're so scared of sacrificing the other ones.
Yes.
That kind of stasis for me, that's a lonely feeling. That's really difficult to be, you know, to be stuck in this swirl of fantasy and not be grounded in the here and now. That can be really lonely.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the way that you described that. I don't think I have ever perceived the Seven of Cups that way, but I'm having this light bulb moment right now because, interestingly enough, I've been getting the Seven of Cups lately. And in all my years, that has never been a card that's shown up regularly for me.
That's
so
interesting.
I was like, are you telling me I'm overwhelmed? I have too many choices. And when you've just said that, I was thinking about, so listeners, I've been going through some emotional turmoil in my life. And I have such a wonderful community surrounding me, but there is isolation in despair, even if it's only in your head.
Yeah.
And you just like put two and two together for me. So I'm like very grateful that you just talked about that, because that static indecision, just like, where do I go? What if I say no to this opportunity and then it ends up being something great? You know, what if I say no to this relationship, to this thing, or to this person, and then I regret that? There's something, I think, resonant of a feeling of safety in the staticness of indecision, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, you're not here, you're not there. But until you make a decision, you will have what might feel all the time in the world to make a decision. And that can feel very isolating, because no matter how much support you have, at the end of the day, it's you who chooses how to move forward. And the Seven of Cups just comes in. And as you said, just reminds us that like, this is a static thing, and we are dynamic and vibrant people. Oh, I just love that insight so much, Sarah.
Good. There's like another layer underneath that. This is like the me scraping to like the bottom of the paleontological, like getting to the bottom of the dig. Is that Nine of Swords?
Ooh.
And that devil pairing, like talk about real stasis and an inability to move, that freeze response to anxiety that we feel when we feel alienated, we feel out of control because we're not connected with what's going on outside of us, right?
Right.
When we're so deep in our own minds and unable to get grounded outside of ourselves,
yes,
that is just like a tremendously lonely, just like devastating feeling. And that's when that devil card can really pop up and really like wreak havoc, I think. I think the devil card's really lovely in other senses, but that Nine of Swords double pairing, like that is a dangerous place to be in.
Right.
And it comes from that static, that freeze response to like, oh gosh, how do I connect outside of myself when I'm feeling just like completely cut off and shut out?
Right. Thank you for sharing that. We have this issue of mass loneliness, and you just shared some really great examples of cards and pairings that we might relate to when we feel lonely. I'm curious what you think about tarot archetypes that might represent the antidote to loneliness.
Yes, I've got a long list for this one too.
Yeah.
And it starts with a card that I know that you're thinking a lot about this year, which is the Star.
Yep. It's my summer year.
That paired, I think, with that seven of cups, I think that that's a really sweet pairing. I think that the Star, ooh, as you know, a card about like, that's a card for healing after and also during like major rumbles and major movement in our foundations. After
right.
that tower, we have the space and hopefully the time to go along with that space for taking care of ourselves and really reflecting on and letting ourselves feel those emotions that come up when we go through a tower moment, when we go through a five of coins moment, when we feel that we're stuck in that nine of swords. Feeling those things and not repressing them is a really important part of gaining traction and momentum and moving out of that and into something else. So that Star for me is just foundational. The three of coins, the three of pentacles,
yeah,
finding ways to connect outside of ourselves with either other human beings or with, you know, other species, like with our environment. That three of coins is so important for feeling that sense of connection with the outside. I know, like in my loneliest moments, I've always wanted to, the best way for me to break out of that kind of freeze and stasis is to get out into the world. Even if it's just going, this is like pre-COVID times, because I actually haven't done this since the pandemic started, but going to a movie theater and watching a film with other people in the audience, that in itself feels like a really good point of connection where like, all right, I'm connecting with the film. Through my emotional connection with the film, I'm also experiencing this like communal thing with these other human beings who I will never speak to in this dark movie theater. Even that amount of connection can be a real balm. Reminding ourselves that we're part of the world, that world card for me is really important. The Eight of Coins, the Eight of Pentacles is really important. And like, I realize that I keep focusing on like this earth element, this like really tangible, really concrete way that we're moving through the world, which I think is so important when, you know, loneliness is all up in our, you know, it's part of our brainscapes. It's all air. Finding
right.
ourselves is really important, right? Before we can get to things like the Page of Cups, connecting with our emotions.
Yeah.
Or the Seven of Wands, which is a card that I could go on and on about the Seven of Wands. I think that that's a really powerful card that for me is so important for getting out of funks. That kind of like combustion and propulsion and energy. I love the Seven of Wands. I love it. And then the fool, allowing yourself to feel all of the things and, you know, also hopefully give yourself the grace to feel foolish or feel silly or feel, I don't know, feel unlovable, but then, you know, pick yourself back up and try to trudge up that hill again. Even if you do trip and you find yourself falling down the mountain one more time, I hope that you're laughing a little bit while you do. Finding little moments of grace, I think, are really important.
I totally agree. As you were talking, I was just thinking about my experiences in growing this wonderful friend family throughout the past year or a few years. And from going to a very isolated place in an abusive relationship to opening myself up to being around other people, that was really scary for me. I was like, okay, I'm living alone. I'm in San Francisco. Well, excuse me, I had my kitty, but I'm not living with any other humans. I don't really know anyone here. So what do I do? And I signed up for a meetup for local Black women. And it was at a park that was within, it was at Dolores Park, which is within walking distance of my old apartment. And I was like, okay, this is really, really nerve-wracking for me. But what would it be like if I just met other people and just showed up as myself? That way, I don't set the standard of, like, you know, perfection, that, or not perfection, but this idealized version of myself that I can't maintain. And so, like the fool, I went. I didn't make any long-term friends or anything, but I had a good time. And that moment, I think, was the catalyst for me to start really reaching out and going and doing things on my own, but around other people. And that is so scary. And, you know, I did this after months of therapy, talking about, among other things, like my fear of never having friends, or like the friends that I have, like, you might not think I'm interesting or cool enough, so I'm not gonna insert myself into their world because I don't want a burden.
No. Oh my God. No. Yeah. The nice thing about the fool is that, like, also, like, you know, it doesn't have to be all the time and it doesn't have to be forever. I love that you went to this meetup in Dolores Park. It was within walking distance. And then when things get too, like, if things get too overwhelming, you're like, wow, I'm really overstimulated right now. Like, this has been fun. I feel great and I have to flee. I've got to go now.
Oh, you know then, it.
That's when you have your Nine of Cups moment and you're like, I've got to go back to, like, a safe, cozy little space with snacks and with my favorite felines, or, you know, canines, or in my case, two parakeets that make me happy. And I get to then recharge in my like little safe nest, right?
Yeah.
Having both, like, okay, I'm gonna run out into the world. I'm gonna have a quick adventure. It could be really great. It could be ridiculous. It could be really scary. But I've got a safe place to go back to when I'm done, where I can sit and reflect and, like, have a snack and say, like, okay, like, that, like, what went well?
Right.
What do I want to continue gravitating towards? Like, step by step. That's wonderful. I'm so glad that you did that.
Thank you. Yeah, it took a lot of guts, but that was a real watershed moment for me.
Good. And
for anyone listening, I totally recommend doing something like that, or like going to a theater by yourself safely, and just being around other people is, maybe it doesn't immediately solve your loneliness. It reminds you that you're not alone, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, there may be only couples in this movie theater, but they're all individual people with their own lives and troubles. And who knows, some of them might feel pretty lonely too. But there's just something about connecting to the energy of just being around other people. Because listen, Sarah, I was in my apartment. Like, I lived in the Mission and I just hated weekends so much because I was in this shopping area. Everyone out and having fun. Everyone's holding hands. And I just stayed in my apartment and just like watched the people walk, walk my street. And I just wouldn't really leave the house for, you know, days. And I think if you are feeling lonely, I think The Fool is an excellent partner to have. And that's not to say this leap has to be off, you know, Mount Everest or anything.
Exactly.
Maybe, you know, I'm going to spend 15 minutes at this meetup and then I'm going to go home. So,
and then I'm going to reflect on all of like the weird kooky people I just met. Like, oh, wow. There's something really humbling and gratifying about being reminded by the outside world that there's all kinds of stuff happening that has nothing to do with us. And that's okay. And sometimes it's a really great distraction from what's going on inside of us, right? Loneliness is all about, so much of it has to do with us inside of ourselves. It has sometimes very little to do with our, with the conditions that we find ourselves in outside of ourselves. That getting a little bit of external feedback, getting a little external stimulation can be a really good reminder of like, oh yeah, okay. Now I have the reset that I need to remember that I'm part of a much larger matrix here. It's not just me.
Yes, I totally agree. Like you said, like we're part of this like larger matrix. And I know a lot of times people talk about the tarot as a personal tool, but like you said, you know, we're social beings and we're infinitely interconnected with all other beings. So how has tarot shown up in your relationships with other people?
It has shown up like a real balm. It's been really, really lovely. One of my favorite things that I've done with my tarot cards is sit down and do readings with my friends and loved ones. And the first time I told you about my witchy aunts and so I'm like, let me give you a tarot reading. That was when I was a kid, but later on when I was in grad school, I have this wonderful memory, a really beautiful memory of being in graduate school. I was in Madrid for the summer, teaching in Madrid, and I was staying with one of my aunts in her apartment in Madrid. I got to stay with her for 6 weeks. And towards the end of that time that I was staying with her, a friend of mine from grad school came to Madrid to do their own research and ended up staying with us. My aunt let her stay in her spare room for a couple of days. And one afternoon, she pulled out this really interesting deck with these triangular cards. It was called like a Russian, I think it was a quote unquote Russian traveler deck.
It was
really fun because it was kind of like building pictograms with these, like the details don't matter, but basically the three of us sat around her dining room table and we gave ourselves readings and we sat there for maybe like 3 hours having these lovely conversations about like, oh, well, that's interesting. I wonder how that works. Like, how do you feel that this is relevant? Oh, this reminds me of this and that reminds me of that. And we're able to connect with each other just based on this series of really lovely conversations that we had. And that is one of my favorite memories from my mid-20s, is sitting down with my aunt and with my friend at the dining room table. I can still remember it. The window was open, sunlight was coming in. It was so lovely. And since then, giving tarot readings to my friends and my loved ones, that is so special. I love sitting down and having these kinds of quiet, reflections, these kind of like quiet, introspective conversations in which we get really vulnerable with each other in ways that we usually don't. And you know, though we're really, really close friends and we care really deeply about each other, we have so little opportunities to really talk about the big stuff. And the tarot gives us an opportunity to do that, which I've always really appreciated.
That's amazing. That memory sounds so precious, and how prominently it shows up in your memory is a testament to how powerful it was for you. And I love that. I used to feel like reading tarot for my friends was like, oh, you know, they're expecting this, you know, super professional reading, and I have to talk like this. And, you know, but over time, I've come to understand it as like a conversational tool.
Yes,
And
absolutely.
you know me, I care about what your favorite color is. I really care about, you know, I really do care about your favorite food, but I want to talk about the juicy stuff, the meaty stuff, the things that make us human and flawed. And I really love how you use the word vulnerable about how things got with that conversation between you all, because I do think you know, I just wrote down this note, like tarot arrow to vulnerability. And I, you know, dare I say, if more of us were willing to be, if actually, let me back up. If there were more spaces in which it was
Yes.
safe for
If there
us,
were more opportunities for it, absolutely.
we would be far more connected and far more communal and empathetic to other people. And that's a lot of, I think, what's behind my tarot work is reminding people that, like, yes, I do tarot readings for like your job, but like at the end of it, like at the end of all tarot, and let's say you've accomplished all your goals and you have this perfect life, you know, what's left? You know, like you just stop. No, like you are a part of this world. And tarot reminds us about, yes, our feelings and our interactions, but this complex web that those things connect to, and we learn about ourselves through our relationships. And so tarot really brings that up. And I love the idea of doing that in a friendly setting, and where you already know, like, this is a safe space. And that's a great way, I think, just to practice vulnerability.
Absolutely. And what you listening to you just now, I immediately think of the Ten of Coins, the Ten of
Yep,
Pentacles.
my favorite.
When you get to the end of the yellow brick road, what is there other than your relationships with others, the way that you're influencing your community, your environment, the legacy that you're leaving? When you think of legacy building, what does that mean to you? When I think of legacy building, I'm thinking about like, what kind of impact am I leaving on the web that I'm a part of? How am I strengthening the web that it's not my web, right? It's our web. I'm just one little bit of it. That is, that for me is really special. Thinking about the way that the tarot is like a system of images and like shorthand, shorthand archetypes, allows us, you know, we have the opportunity to test the limits of those archetypes, to think about, all right, how do I relate to these ideas that I have about XYZ things? Like when I think of these values, what is my relationship with those values?
Right.
And how can these cards help me really like test them, expand them, make them more flexible and make them more expansive? And that's really difficult to do when you're doing it on your own. We can all read tarot for ourselves. But are we going to be able to push our own understandings of our own inherent ideas about the world and our positions in the world? We often need outside influence to help to help put pressure on us, gentle pressure, but we need to be pressed to grow. I wish that that weren't the case, because I've been fighting that for decades since I was a little kid. I just want to be comfy and cozy and think my thoughts. Well, my thoughts aren't going to get interesting until I push myself and I allow myself to be pushed by others to expand them.
Wow. A wave of peace just like rained over me from my tippy head to my toes. Wow. That was such a gentle way to put, oh, I adore your brain, Sarah. Oh my God.
I like that you allow me to say these things out loud. See, I wouldn't be able to do this on my own. This is a conversation. I love it.
Right. Yeah. And I love that you pulled up the Ten of Coins. That is my favorite card in the whole deck. And if you are familiar with the Rider-Waite deck, listeners, you'll see that you'll see in the foreground there are like two figures, they're in love, and you know, everything's wonderful. But if you peer more deeply into the card, you'll realize that there's symbology all over the place. And what that card tells me, among other things, but my favorite interpretation is there is magic all around you. You just have to turn to it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's, you know, totally up, you know, in this vein of like understanding yourself, but your understanding of yourself is going to be very limited if
yeah.
you don't interact with anything beyond yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. You make magic by combining elements. That's how you do it.
Nail on the head. Nail the head. So I think I'd love to end on this one question. I'm going to peer into your brain again, and just ask if you have any advice or tips for people who want to use tarot more often in their interpersonal lives.
Yeah, just play with it. It doesn't have to be serious. It doesn't have to be high stakes. It doesn't have to be serious. It doesn't have to be high stakes. It can just start as, I actually did this in, so I'm a witch with a day job. And in one iteration of my day job, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I had this deck that I got from Powell's Books in Portland, Oregon, when I was traveling. I was coming through town one day and I went to Powell's. And I got this lovely deck. Now I can't remember the name of it, but we're gonna have to put it in the notes. This wonderful affirmation deck. Oh gosh, what was it called? It had like a unicorn. It was had unicorns and it had like really funny and silly affirmations that were like really low stakes, really giggly, really silly. And I kept that deck on a little side table in my office. At that point, I was working. I work in higher education and I was working with graduate students, MA and PhD students. And they would come into my office and we'd often have to have hard conversations about stuff. And having that deck of cards and being able to just have it as an invitation for folks to like pull a card, see what it says, hold on to it for the week, bring it back to me at the end of the week and tell me what you think. We ended up doing that in staff meetings. We would pull cards from this affirmation deck at the start of every staff meeting. And it got to the point where even the chair of the department pulled a card and held on to it. And they're like, you know what? Not that this was silly, and it still is. And yet it's been so nice to reflect on my week or my month. I think she held on to that gold card for like a good month. It's like little low stakes, things like that, or doing what my aunt does. You know, she had this really fun deck that the three of us could play together in Madrid, but she inspired me by, I remember one day also sitting at the dining room table and I'm sitting there by myself, I'm having lunch, and my aunt comes in and she has her purse. She's got a deck of cards and she has a silk scarf. And she said, I'm going to the park. I'm going to meet a friend. She's having a rough time and we're just going to throw some cards. And in Spanish, we say like, tirar cartas, right? So we're just going to throw some cards around and see what comes up and see if we can problem solve together with the cards. And I was like, wow. I remember her leaving thinking to myself, like, what a beautiful, easy, breezy summer day at El Retiro in Madrid. Like, that sounds like a really lovely way to spend the afternoon. Even though this person, you know, her friend has like a problem that she's working on and it's hard. Like, okay, let's make the hard stuff a little bit more fun by working on it together. So that's my advice, is to have fun with it in some way. Connect with your friends, connect with your loved ones in a playful way so that it's low stakes, and allow yourself to be surprised and delighted.
I love that. I think that's a wonderful note to end on. Thank you so much, Sarah, for talking with me today. I feel like this conversation has been a really wonderful glass of water for my soul.
Oh,
I
thank you.
Just want you to know that I'm so happy that tarot brought us together as friends.
Yes.
And I love you.
I love you, Maria. Thank you. Thank you for having me. This has been so much fun. You're a gem.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl underscore, that's BIRDGERHL underscore. And you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.